Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the plague.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me? You don't want to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown, new season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Welcome into the Husker 24/7 podcast. I'm Mike Schaefer, joined by Brian Christofferson. One day after Matt Rhule took complete control of the Nebraska football program. Brian Christofferson, you were in the building. I want to get this out of the way early, just so you can make fun of me, or you can agree with it, or whatever. I feel like the sort of pomp and circumstance surrounding head coaching announcements is like over the top. And the introductory press conferences have become over the top. At the same time, greatly enjoyed yesterday's experience. I wasn't there. You've now covered like several of these. Do you remember when it was just like a guy sitting at a desk with some microphones in front of him talking?
There used to be when Bo Pelini was hired, which is my first one. It was just where the Tuesday press conference usually is, like on floor six of the stadium. And so everybody, that's not a small setting, but it's your normal press conference room. And it feels like it's grown a little bit. There was kind of a joke for a while that I think the third floor of the Memorial Stadium is where the hirings were made and the sixth floor was where the firings was made. And I think it was Ronnie Green or somebody who kind of joked, you know, maybe it's time to get away from, there was a thought, maybe it's time to just get away and clear that out and go to something new. So they're at the Hawks Championship Center. And actually, if you could say maybe it's over the top, felt like a little bit of a homecoming dance with some of the balloons and stuff. I didn't mind it though, because there was a lot of space, and that's what I like. There was a lot of space for people to kind of move around and you could find people and stuff. So it actually was pretty effective for what we wanted to do. And that's all I care about is, you know, what works for us.
We're trying to do.
Yeah. We're very selfish that way.
Yeah. Well, you were there and, we'll start with Matt Rhule stuff and then we'll maybe get into the search at the very end and what Trev Alberts had to say. But this podcast will mostly just focus on yesterday's introductory press conference. Matt Rhule gave what I think was like an 18-minute opening statement before the first questions were asked. And at no point did it feel like a filibuster. You know, like some coaches will get up there and just kind of talk and talk and talk, and it limits the amount of like questions that are going to get asked. This didn't really feel like a filibuster. This felt like a guy who likes to talk that basically had spent 2 months on the shelf and was just given like total freedom to just go. And boy, did he go.
Yeah, he said I wrote this in the column yesterday. His father was a minister.
Yeah.
And it felt like a sermon.
It really did.
Like there was a cadence to it too, kind of, and it was effective though. I know for a fact some people who before that press conference started were like, and then afterwards they're like, all right, where's my uniform, sort of thing. Like, let's play, you know. He really did succeed that. I mean, the biggest thing was he spoke Nebraska's love language. He talked about physicality, talked about November Big Ten football, basically was the beginning. It's just like, how do you win in this league when it's 38 degrees and you're playing Iowa and Wisconsin? And occasionally you can get away with it by, your wide receiver running past their DBs for an 87-yard touchdowns. But most weeks, you have to have that identity that Trev Albert spoke about in his intro, where this is who we are in this moment when it's a three-point game and there's 10 minutes left. We know what we can rely on, and we can rely on our guys in the trenches. And he spoke about playing old-school football, and he said that's who we're going to be. That doesn't mean you can't have explosive guys on the perimeter, all that stuff, and a great quarterback, but you've got to start up front. And basically, Trev and Rhule, wouldn't you say, Schaefer, they sound like they speak the same language too. I mean, they were basically on the same page about this is who we are and what we want to be.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of comparisons made between Matt Rhule's introductory press conference and, of course, Frost or Mike Riley or whoever. But one of the things I wrote about yesterday is that he clearly understands where he's at for this job. I mean, like, he came in, and there's a line in there, and you kind of hit on it, where he starts talking about all the things that he wants with the football team. But then he sort of finishes it with the thing that they need. And the thing that they need is to dominate and win the line of scrimmage. And obviously, I mean, you mentioned that sounds like the love language for Nebraska fans. And I wholeheartedly agree. And it also, and this was the overarching theme to me, it feels like Nebraska has a Big Ten coach for the first time since being in the Big Ten. Like, they have a coach that sort of taps into what this conference largely is, which is defense and running. And he said that. And obviously they have to go out and do it. Like, this is the part where, you know, we could all be smitten with what's said, but he has to go and do. And that's where the money is going to be earned, and the accolades will follow and everything else, if they can go and effectively run the ball on the road. And if they can go and control a team's running game and control the line of scrimmage and get after the quarterback, protect their own quarterback, all those sorts of things. They still have to go and do that, but it very much felt like a Big Ten football coach in Lincoln. And I think that's what Trev's wanted this entire time. I mean, you go back and how he didn't want to put, you know, wins on anything or put a standard out there, because I think he wanted to see it where it's Nebraska is up there winning at the line of scrimmage. They're up there creating havoc defensively, all those sorts of things. So, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, when he says this was his 1A candidate, that doesn't feel like that's made up to me. Like, this, it feels like Nebraska went out and got a guy that they felt like they need at this point in time in their program.
Yeah, I believe him. And I mean it also because even when Matt Rhule was coaching Carolina, when this job search opened, on our very board, you know, when we're posting guys, we had his name on there. Yep. And he was a coach in the NFL. And it was because you could kind of, there was in the back of everybody's mind, there was sort of, he's not an NFL guy, is he? Like, it's not going to happen. Maybe he just doesn't have the quarterback, whatever. I'm not saying he couldn't have won in the NFL in the right circumstances, but maybe the situation wasn't quite right there. But it felt like that marriage with Carolina just wasn't going to happen. And so I can believe that Trev was also eyeballing that, thinking, like, if he comes open, that's a phone call within the first week. What was interesting, Schaefer, was hearing him talk about his family and sort of how they fell for Nebraska. And I think that was important to him too. I mean, they snuck in here. I think it was the Michigan week. It came out from somebody. Trev might've said that. They came into Lincoln and drove around, and his wife is like, this is the place, Matt, this is it, you know? And his son watched like 500,000 YouTube videos or whatever of Husker football. His family wants it, and I think he really wanted it. I thought the most telling thing, and we have the video on our site, he did a side session with the media, and there was a point where it looked like the deal was going to fall through, he said. Not for, because either side necessarily wanted it to. There was logistics, and it just didn't feel like it was going to happen. And the way he said it, you could tell it was really heartfelt. He slumped on his couch, basically, and was like, damn. You know, like, that was the job. you know, like that, how you'd feel if like you thought something was just right and was meant to be. So I think you got out of it yesterday, if nothing else. This is a guy, obviously, he took the job, so that tells you he wants to be there. But there's more than that. Like, he really, I think, by the end of it, wanted Nebraska very much as Nebraska wanted him. And it showed in how he talked about it.
Yeah, I mean, I said that they got to go forward. We got to see it. But just it had always felt like a good fit. And then he's up there talking yesterday, and it sounds like a good fit. I mean, that's sort of what I was reminded of. I mean, my thing with Matt Rhule is I've sort of been casually following him since he was at Temple because, you know, his name came on the radar of what they were doing there. And then he would pop up on these sort of hot boards. And then it's like, oh, this guy's going to have his opportunity of where he wants to go. And the fact that he chose Baylor over Oregon, and I don't know how often this gets talked about, but he had the opportunity to go to Oregon. Like that was his job if he wanted it. And he chose to go to Baylor. And that kind of fascinates me in itself. Like, this is a guy that isn't afraid. And that was when Baylor was in the heat of all the sanctions that it was going to get and everything else. Like, clearly isn't afraid to roll up the sleeves and go to work. And I think, again, you look at Nebraska and, like, this isn't a turnkey job the way that we thought it was after Bo Pelini left and Mike Riley inherited it. And you know, I don't know to the level of rebuild that we would call it, but he's got to put in the work. And I think he referenced that several times on Monday where he basically said, like, you know, this week is huge for a variety of reasons. He had a good line in there, I thought, about not overvaluing any one day or any one thing over anything else, that it's all about having to stack good weeks up, that you can't, you know, solve everything with one good day, with one acquisition, with anything like that. It's about putting in the totality of time. And I think that's a good standard for him to sort of set going forward, where it sort of preaches patience to people with the idea that they're working towards this. It's just going to build over time. It's not going to be any one thing. Because we've talked about it in the past. It's one of the fallacies with Nebraska football is that they're always one play away, one quarterback away, one skill player away, one pass rusher away. And the reality is you need the other 10 out on the football field. You need the other 90 plays to go well for you too. All of those sorts of things. I appreciated that. I thought there was a lot of subliminal text that you could pull out of what he was saying that sort of fits with where Nebraska football finds itself.
Yeah, he said it's going to be hard. I mean, he said that. He said it's going to be a hard job. And it will be. I think the first year could be really hard. And I think people have to realize that. There's going to be a ton of roster turnover, I think. I don't know. He might have his QB. Maybe Casey sticks around. Maybe some of those pieces are in there and it's not as dramatic as I think it's going to be. But we are expecting across the country a portal movement like we haven't seen before even. And especially at schools where there's a new coach, there's going to be some people like, yeah, not my cup of tea. And that's fine. He said that also. He said, I'm going to lay out my vision to guys. And this is the way it's going to be. And I want guys who want to be here. Like, I want football players who are really excited about what we're doing and the process we're making. And if it's not for them, that's fine. We want them to be happy somewhere else. That's how he laid it out to the guys the other day. So I also think he's got a little bit better grip on sort of some stuff that he'll have to do. Is that we talked about a guy who doesn't get caught chasing rabbits and handling just being the CEO at Nebraska and stuff like that. There's small examples even yesterday that were good on him. And like one of them to me is someone asked him about Frost. He didn't bring him up intentionally, but he's like, yeah, I called him Sunday and he's a friend. And I think he's a good coach and, you know, I want to respect him. And I don't know how it's going to go going forward, but I really like the fact and would like it if a current head coach didn't throw the previous head coach under the bus.
Love it. We're 100% with you.
So if I get these tweets or texts about the Frost, whatever he said about Frost the last couple of days from people who are like, oh yeah, well, he doesn't know that part, you know, I don't know on that. I'm just like, he's saying the respectful thing. He's not throwing him under the bus. To me, that's a mature coach who knows what he's supposed to do in that situation. And he might actually think it too, but I like that. We got to get away from that around here of like everybody who left is the worst thing ever. And I don't want to do that with the strength coaches either. Like, you know, we play that game with strength coaches and nobody knows, has a clue what goes on in there. And yet everyone's got a big take about this guy sucked and this guy's great and all that. And then we'd say the next guy's great and that guy sucked. And so, I'm not going to do that with the strength coaches. At the very least, Schaefer, you can hold me to that.
I'm more than happy to hold you to that. I have no opinions on the strength coach. It's always one of those things I just laugh about because I don't know what's going on over there. I don't know what the objective is. I don't, you know, it's not like Duvall talked a lot or gave any insight as to what they were trying to do. You know, I have personal opinions on the way some guys would look, and that kind of thing, but it doesn't mean I have any idea as to what's going on over there. And so I do get a kick out of the strength coach. But going back to the sort of overall point, and Matt Rhule said this, and I thought it was really important. He didn't come here to run players off of Nebraska's team either. Like he made mention several times about how he chose to coach them, that he wants the players to know that there's an open door policy, that they can come talk to him if they want to know where they stand or where things are right now, all those sorts of things. Like, I think that's really valuable because in current 2022 football, you got to re-recruit your roster all the time. You need to have sort of an open understanding of where you are relative to the depth chart and what your coach thinks of you. And it feels like Matt Rhule is going to have that sort of openness. You know, we'll see. I felt like the early belief on Scott Frost was that he was a player's coach based on how it looked at UCF. And then 2.5 to 3 years into this thing, everything you would hear had every indication that he was not a player's coach. So we'll see with Matt Rhule. We'll see if that open door stays and everything else. But for right now, he's saying the right things. He's doing the right things. You know, a big thing to me whenever there's this transition is, I hope we never hear him say it, and hopefully other people don't feel like they have to, but it shouldn't be a go and get his guys kind of thing. Like, he's got to coach players that are here. Ernest Hausman needs to be his guy today. And the sense that I got from Matt Rhule when he was up there talking is that, you know, Ernest Hausman, AJ Allen, Malcolm Hartzog, Richard Torres, whoever from that class, they might have been Scott Frost recruits. They might have been Scott Frost players. They might have been Mickey Joseph players. Today, they're Matt Rhule's players, and that's what matters. Like, this, avoiding the fallacy of the whole, well, we got to let him recruit his guys, and he's got to set up his thing. He understands this. I mean, he even said that he's not putting a timeline on these things because he wants to win now, and I appreciate all of that because there's so much, like, looking back while wishing forward instead of just recognizing that to be successful, it starts now. You know, it starts with these pieces.
Yeah. And I mean, if you are the type of coach who sort of always acts like you're looking for some other players, the current players,
they're going to oblige that.
What does that do to them? You know, they're thinking like, well, okay, what am I, you know? That's the right way to handle it. And I think he also knows like we said earlier, you give your vision and it's going to weed people out naturally. You know, like, you don't have to go like, get out of here. Yeah. I mean, guys are in this day and age, they'll head out the door with their own 2 feet in most cases. If they're not a fit, you know, so that's the part, that will be okay, I think. And also, this is going to be a very difficult month for them to navigate. The couple things they have going for them though, I think he has a good idea basically on his full-time staff. We took our shot at who guys could be through his previous links. And I think that list, as you're watching it play out, is going to be pretty good when it's all said and done. So Bruns did a good job with that list on our site. But so that helps because this isn't a deal, I think, where he's going to only have like 5 coaches by the end of the week. You know, I think he's going to know his full-time staff, and that helps you communicate with recruits. And then the other part, Schaefer, is the class is made up of some guys who are in-state guys. And I think just not a lot of guys who are going to waver. There might be a couple. There's a couple connected to Mickey who might be waiting for that one way or another. But I don't think that's going to be a thing where that just falls off the cliff. So I think that's a good thing for him.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick Six, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Hosts Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick Six has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick Six is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, April 26th on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
Yeah, I mean, one of the things people should know about Matt Rhule is that when he went to Baylor, they had one commitment. It was a kicker. He went and got 27 players in that class by the time they got to the February signing period. So he's not afraid or incapable of having to recruit like his hair's on fire, of having to put this thing together. And, oh, by the way, that class that he assembled features a number of NFL guys and guys that had big college careers. Like, one of the things that's kind of funny is that when he talks about sort of his system of how he recruits, that's sort of what everybody's doing right now. But at the time in 2015, 2016, it was a little bit more revelatory. It was a little bit more, okay, I'm going to put a premium on just straight athleticism over what this kid did as a running back for this school in Texas, because I think he's got the ability to run and we give him the opportunity, he's going to be just fine. And so I'm very curious. Even these early offers, Brian, and I don't know how much you've tracked them, these guys are long. Like every one of, like the defensive backs have been like 6'1 or 6'2. There's a pass rusher yesterday that's just gangly and long. You know, there's probably not going to be a ton of like super finished products that show up in Lincoln. But it's again, another bet on development, which has been a big thing for him everywhere he's gone. And he even said yesterday that failing in the NFL, he thinks, has made him better in terms of understanding player development and understanding what he needs to do to get guys ready for them to get to the NFL, because now he's coached a team of NFL players. Before, he coached, you know, a group of guys that had the opportunity to go there, but now he's coached NFL players. I think that's all really interesting. I think that can be a really easy recruiting pitch too.
And I mean, you talk about an example of, from what we've heard of how he recruits, and then here it is at Nebraska right away, Jalen Lloyd. I mean, to me, is an example of that. Gets an offer right away. Tremendous athlete, track star.
The best athlete in the state. Like, yeah, it's not close.
Yeah. And so there you go. And he took 24 hours, and he's like, yep, there's an offer. So, I mean, there's your
One of the fastest guys in the country. Yes, we'll interested.
Take him. Yeah,
he's 6'1". Yes, he jumps out of the gym. Yes, okay. He's not really a football player. We'll figure it out.
Yeah. Now there's a skeptic can push back on some of that, but you'd have to say so far during his 10 years, it's worked in places, and now we see if it can work here in the Big Ten, and it's going to be a big bad Big Ten. We know that. I mean, with Wisconsin hiring Fickell and USC and UCLA coming in. It's going to be a battle, and that's why I think it's kind of good that there's one more year with the divisions, and he gets a year. I'm not saying schedule is easy for Nebraska football right now. They haven't had a winning season in 6 years, but at least the schedule's you can navigate it if you really got things together where you would have a shot at a bowl game or something like that next year, and you can kind of build that first year toward feeling like you're more steady when USC, UCLA comes in, and then it just feels like it's going to be a war, you know, to try to win games.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you 100%. I feel like a move like this to get that year in before you're in the sort of wide openness of 2024 is going to be pretty helpful. And that's where, you know, I'm probably more all in on this idea than most would be, but that's where I think keeping a Casey Thompson is huge for you,
because
you just get a steadiness there at quarterback, and you don't have to worry about it as much. Now, you still got to go out and get somebody that can be behind him. You got to have a backup quarterback. I think that's huge. It's a big thing right now, but the steady nature that Casey Thompson gives you, And we saw it on Black Friday. I mean, that was his best performance, I thought. Like, he was in command when he was back there. He was comfortable throwing the ball. And, you know, if Nebraska wanted to in the fourth quarter, if they weren't so worried about blowing that game and just trying to salt it away, he could have put up more yardage. He could have put up more passing yardage and maybe another touchdown or so. Really strong game for him to go out on, and I think it should be really valuable to have him back.
Yep. I mean, for that conversation, people just need to think back to the last portal cycle. And there was a thought, I think, at the time, like, oh, okay, Chubb or Purdy, maybe, there you go, and just put him in the competition. I mean, they only won four games, so you can't act like Casey Thompson mm-hmm. won them, like, a ton more games or anything. But we saw what the offense looked like without him and then with him, and it's just night and day. So, yeah, if Matt Rhule can convince Casey Thompson to stick around, and I think there's good reason to, I've said this many times, for there's going to be more stories like of 24-year-old guys who aren't necessarily going to get drafted, but they could play one more year on national TV every week of football and make good money doing it. I don't know why you wouldn't want to.
Yeah, no, that's going to be something to follow for sure. It seems like a guy like Marcus Washington is going to be back. He has a chance to be your number one wide receiver. I don't know that he's that player, so they're going to have to go into the portal and get another pass catcher like they did in Samari Toure and Trey Palmer. It's remarkable that Nebraska, not a school known for wide receivers. Basically, their biggest portal win the last 2 years have been wide receivers. And guys that, you know, were good, but there still is a question like, yeah, but can you do this when you're the guy? Mm-hmm. And both of them answered that. And one's now in the NFL, and I suspect Trey Palmer will be joining relatively soon. Also tight end. I mean, it just feels yeah. like, you know, whether it's wide receiver or tight end, they got to get a couple guys out of the portal that give you a little bit of a veteran steady presence there. You know, we'll see with Thomas Fedoni if he's in the plans for Matt Rhule or what that looks like. Tight end hasn't been a big part of the Baylor, or wasn't a big part of the Baylor or the Temple offense, but it's been a big thing at Nebraska. And maybe you're looking for a Jack Stoll type. I know that you don't like it when I mention his name, Brian, but a guy that can help you up front and move the pile a little bit. He's having a nice career with Philadelphia.
He recovered I saw him recover the onside kick last yeah. night to lock up the game. But yeah.
So we got to be fair to Jack Stoll, even though he's, you know, I don't know if that beef's still going on or not, but.
The problem when you guys bring this up is there's some people walk in with no context on that joke.
There's no context to the joke. I just made it up one day and it stuck yeah. for 3 years. So
it has, yeah.
And but, you've never really gotten mad at me, but I know that it irks you just slightly enough that you're like, come on, let's just move on. I don't need any more of this.
No. I like Jack Stoll. I'll reiterate that. Always have. But I thought yesterday was a good day for Nebraska football. I think they got we'll see. I mean, we don't want to overhype the coach off the press conference. He won the day. He had to do a little winning. Like, sometimes it's set up where a guy is going to, he could say about anything and people are going to be like, yeah, I love this hire. I've already know that. But I have to say, Schaefer, on our message board, I thought it was very popular right away when Rhule was announced. It's a very high percentage that are in favor of it. My sense of the general public was it was more, I don't know. That was kind of what I got. So that was interesting. But then I think when he got up there yesterday, he at least got some of those folks to sit up and be like, okay, let's see what he's got. So he succeeded at that. And that's what that was about.
Yeah, I think you hit it exactly. I know several people that I'm friends with were basically like, why do you think this is a good hire? Like, he got fired from the Panthers, you know, like what are they actually getting here? And then you position that with Wisconsin hiring Luke Fickle, and you just sort of had this like angst among some Nebraska fans. And I know for at least a few of them, just listening to Matt Rhule talk yesterday was a bit of a balm for some of that. Like, you know, feel a little bit better about it. I'm not super surprised that this hire wasn't met with, you know, resounding Cheers immediately. Like, I don't know that Matt Rhule is a big enough name. I think for our message board, people saw that Nebraska seemed to be involved with Bronco Mendenhall and Jeff Monken and some other names that seemed significantly less enticing. And so the idea of getting Matt Rhule versus opening those doors seems to be a lot better. But I think people just weren't really aware of him and kind of the work that he did at Temple and Baylor. You just think of him as sort of a flamed out NFL coach. And there was a lot of people in the Panther organization that were happy, you know, when that was announced or whatever. So He's got to win people over still, but Monday was a big step in that direction.
Is there anything you want to say to tie this up? It was a 2-month search and
13 names.
Yep. That's what he said.
Not all candidates. Those are, I think, you know, that right. encompasses people like, I mean, we know he talked with Urban Meyer and Chris Peterson. I think that counts amongst his 13, but those were more conversations about other coaches currently in the college environment than it was about those two coaching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he succeeded at sort of keeping things locked up pretty well. You'd have to say Trev did.
Yeah, he seemed pretty pleased with that. And then he was like thanking the media for giving him the space. And it's like, I don't know how much space you really had the last 2 weeks.
But. Yeah, we just couldn't get there. We couldn't get into your space enough. Yeah. So I think Trev probably pleased a lot of people with his performance. I know he pleased like Ronnie Green and Ted Carter and those guys talking to them. And we'll have more stuff on the board from some of what they said and kind of what the brass said about things today. So it was a hire that I think most people are saying like right now they give it a good grade, but there's that skeptic in Nebraska fans that is rightly there that say, I'll just wait and see. And I understand that completely.
Yeah. Let's finish with this, and I didn't tell you it was coming, and this is my favorite thing to do to you guys. Give me a bold prediction as it relates to Mickey Joseph or to other members of Matt Rhule's staff, or if there's a recruit out there or a transfer portal thing. Give me one bold prediction that people can hold you to.
That is tough. The Mickey thing's really tough.
Really talked about it. Do we want to touch on that a little
bit? Yeah, I'll go there with it. Your question. I felt like a week or two ago, a little stronger about it, the possibility of him staying. I'm not saying I think it's tilted that he's not. I don't know. I really don't know. But the more I've thought about it, it's a tough situation. And I think there are head coaches. This is not a knock on Mickey at all. Everybody seems to love Mickey. I think just any head coach would say that's kind of a difficult situation when a guy who's been in the captain's chair is now moved over a seat over and he's in the building. It can be tough for both parties. And that's easy to kind of suggest like, oh, this is the perfect scenario. You get this coach in here and you keep Mickey. That's how it's supposed to be. That looks good on paper like a month ago. But now as you like get to like, it actually happening and if that works and stuff. The more I think about it, I think it's very tricky. And I think if they are going to keep him, it would maybe have to be almost like a 7-figure salary. I think that's sort of what we're talking about here. And I don't know if Nebraska will do that or not. He was making $600,000 as a position coach previously. So that would be a significant hike. We do know they have a huge salary pool. That was something that was interesting. Going up to $7 million for 10 coaches. It was $5.15 million this last year. So that's a huge jump. But they're going to have to give those. We're going to see coordinators around here, I think, making $1 million. I think that's going to happen probably, don't you? I mean, with that pool.
Well, if they want to get some of these guys, whether it's a Jeff Collins or Elijah Robinson or whatever the sort of names that are attached to it, you've got that money now that you can sort of make that offer if that's what you want to do. And if you want to keep Mickey, you can pay him $900,000 to be your wide receivers coach. If that's what he wants to do as well, I agree with you that it's a very touchy, almost sort of a, you can see it going either direction and you can explain it either way, I guess, in my mind.
Yeah. And I thought his answer was fair. I mean, it sounds like they're going to talk to it's Tuesday as we're doing this. And it sounded like they were going to talk today from what a recruit told us. So we'll see if that happens. But yeah, I don't know beyond that if there's going to be much room for many other guys to be retained. I really don't. Do you think it's just Mickey or bust as far as guys who could get retained, or do you think there could be another?
We'll see. I mean, it seemed unlikely any defensive coaches are going to be sticking around. You know, so then it really comes down to Mickey or Brian Applewhite. We'll see what they end up doing at running back. He gave a pretty good answer where he's been in staff situations like this where, you know, he was on a staff that was let go, and he appreciated having at least the opportunity to talk to the head coach. And sounds like he's making himself available with those guys as well. So we'll see.
Can I say that when at that press conference, they pass a mic around, and there's used to be, I think there was only one mic this time, but sometimes there's multiple mics. So you think maybe someone else got it. So I asked for the mic, and I was thinking maybe I'm like the fourth question or something. So I was the second question yesterday. And when I got to it, I thought it was too early to ask the Mickey question, actually. Like, I kind of wanted that to be like the sixth or seventh question that got asked. Or, you know, it's funny how reporters think. Like, I feel like there was some other stuff to let him establish what he's done and all that. But I was like, this is what people want to know. Everybody's asking, let's just ask it. So so if anybody had a beef with that, I'll explain myself and say I was kind of thinking that question could wait a few, but I pulled the trigger.
I was getting texts from people wondering if you were a plant, if the whole purpose of you being there was to ask that question, just to get Mickey back in the news right away.
No, I think that's what everybody kept asking about, and Rhule knew he's going to get asked that.
Oh, so, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was going to come whether it was question two or question eight. So at some point you answer it.
Nice. Did you angle to be question one? Was it like any kind of a joust between you and Steve Sipple?
I don't think so. Sipple's got seniority on me by a few years, so he can have the first question on that. But and it was about line. It was about the line play, which was good. So, yeah, it all worked out.
All right. Well, we're going to be back later this week. We're going to get into more of the recruiting. We're going to get into more of the coaching hires. We haven't talked about Marcus Satterfield or Evan Cooper or any of those guys right now, but we're going to get into more of that later this week. Michael Brunt, hopefully, will be back with us. He is dealing with some sickness. He cannot talk today, which – you know, he's no stranger to long spells of silence on the podcast, but it just didn't seem necessary to have him in the third box, never saying anything or holding up a whiteboard. So we gave him the day off. We'll see if he joins us again. Be sure to check out everything at Husker 24/7. Plenty of stories up there. We have thoughts from yesterday, analysis from yesterday, news stories from yesterday. The contract details are out if you want that. If you want to know what he's going to make per year and the exact year, It scales up, believe it or not. It is a backloaded contract to allow the Carolina Panthers to pay at least a small portion of what they owe Matt Rhule. You can find all of that at Husker 24/7, as well as commentary from other people about this hire. We're going to have plenty of stuff on recruiting going forward. All that and more can be found at Husker 24/7. So for Brian Christopherson, I'm Mike Shaver. We'll catch you later this week with another Husker 24/7 podcast.
Should you ever set foot outside of the hotel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow. Now streaming on Paramount+. Only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.